There's a lot more punks than there was 4 years earlier, but there was also as many posers. Posers were people that looked like punks, but they did it for fashion.
Welcome to SLC Punks, a Utah Jazz podcast brought to you by the staff of SLC Dunk. Now here's your hosts, Michael Lohman and James Hansen.
Welcome back to the SLC Punks podcast. This is your host, Hanson James.
And this is Milo. We're back.
We are back. Welcome back, Milo. It's probably, outside of the playoffs, my favorite time of the year. It's free agency's coming up. We've got the draft. We just had the draft lottery, which is a lot of fun. It's a great time of year. There's a lot of drama that's going to happen, and we're already starting to see the tip of the iceberg with the drama. But before we kind of delve into the Jazz stuff, what do you think? The New Orleans Pelicans get the number one overall pick in the NBA draft. I'm actually a big fan of what happened.
I love it. I absolutely love it because I think I know there's first there's a Rudy Gobert tweet where he said, we all just witnessed the end of tanking. And I know some people are like, well, there's still going to be teams that lose games on purpose at the end of the year. Yes. But I do think we're going to see the end of the Hinkie tanking or the Suns tanking or the Oklahoma City Thunder, where they tanked multiple years in succession to get Kevin Durant. That model doesn't appear to be a very trustworthy model anymore, because the three worst teams in the NBA, the Knicks, the Cavaliers, and the Suns, are all watching other teams draft pretty high. The Knicks are the only ones who escaped the full guillotine, but even then, they're drafting number three. They almost were drafting number four. And they could, I mean, they would have been outside of the top three prospects in this draft, and there's a big drop-off when you're going from Barrett to Cam Reddish.
Oh, it's really true. And it's obviously a down year in the draft. So maybe not completely dead drafting, but it's going to affect it a lot. Like, and other teams too, not just those three teams, but also, for example, the Atlanta Hawks, who everyone praised for kind of how they've run their organization, they got hopped by three teams. So, yeah. It really is I actually think it's in a lot of ways fixed in some ways. I mean, it's very clear, like, if you're the worst team in the league, that really only, I mean, you have a 14% chance for the top pick.
Yeah, 14% and only a 50% chance at a top four. Yeah. Like that's a coin flip. And so at the end of the day, like you flip a coin and two of those three worst teams ended up outside the top four. That's, I don't think as a general manager, if you're deciding your future before, I mean, you're looking at 65%, 70%. Of having a top three pick, one or two, and then three, you're at about a coin flip, and so you're still okay. Now, like, man, if you're the worst team, like you're missing out on scoping for good talent or developing talent, and you might not even get good talent in the draft. That's a tough scene. You don't want to be in that. I also love how the New Orleans Pelicans now control all leverage with Anthony Davis. Before, they're like, okay, well, whoever lands Zion, they're probably going to be throwing him our way, and you know, and that will be good. But now it's just like, oh, you want to give us the second best prospect in this draft? Or the third? Oh, fascinating. That's adorable. I think there's a lot of things that we could see, and even to the madness where people are like, LeBron could be traded to the New Orleans Pelicans for Zion. I love how crazy it's got all of a sudden. Like, it's pure insanity. I also think, since we're talking about this, this does open up the door for Mike Conley. Now Utah doesn't have to feel like they have to give a really prized prospect for Mike Conley to replace him, as the Grizzlies have the inside track to Ja Morant. Yeah. So now, pretty awesome.
Well, Ja Morant is definitely probably the number two prospect in this draft, unless you really like RJ Barrett. But either way, the Grizzlies are going to look to have someone to kind of pair with Jaren Jackson, and they're going to go young, obviously, which they should, because you want to give them a lot of minutes to develop. And, you know, that's another thing is like this new draft thing probably is not going to take tanking away completely, but it's, I mean, there's still going to be teams like the Memphis Grizzlies who are probably going to go young and allow their team to be bad. So they're probably going to get another top 10 pick next year to pair with whoever they draft this year. You're never going to get rid of that completely, but yeah, it, and speaking of Mike Conley, it does give the Jazz, another shot at getting him if they really want him, because honestly, it's 2 years of $34 million for Mike Conley, who will take minutes away from whoever they draft. And maybe they think that Conley can pair with a Ja Morant or an RJ Barrett. But the truth is, you probably want to get as much as you can and get as many players as you can at kind of that same timeline as Jaren Jackson and Ja Morant to as you can. So the Jazz are the Jazz are kind of winners in this lottery. I mean, I don't know what the Pelicans are going to do. It really is like, if you wanted to pick out the scenario that kind of threw a wrench in things the most, it really is what happened, because like you said, they're in complete control. They can do whatever they want. There's going to be, I mean, honestly, they will just basically play just auctioneer, and whoever gets, like, people at work were asking me, like, well, what do you think? Who do you think will get him? And I said, it's a very boring answer, but it's just going to be whoever gives them the best offer.
That's yeah. And like, here's the crazy thing. Their best offer could be keeping him.
That's
because
the thing.
If David Griffin, who is the general manager there, is an amazing general manager, and he has a really good resume of being, and he could go to Anthony Davis and be like, look what I did for LeBron. Mm-hmm. I turned that team that had really limited assets, and I was able to flip Andrew Wiggins and Deion Waiters and all these guys for Kevin Love and a ton of depth, mm-hmm. to be able to get them a championship. Now I can do the same for you. And we have more talent here. We have more assets. And depending on if we keep Zion or we trade him for other things, we could even improve our depth and have a really good squad. So I think with what he's doing, that is, I think what's so cool about what the draft lottery did was for the past, I don't know what it was, 3 or 4 years, it's been chalk. You know, it's 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3. Worst three teams are getting it. Mm-hmm. Because this is so random, it has changed the entire offseason. The ripple effects of this draft are going to be felt all the way into October. I mean, this draft lottery. We're not even to the draft yet, and the draft lottery is going to reverberate through this offseason because the Pelicans have leverage. So before this, it was like, okay, well, either the Boston Celtics, New York Knicks, or the Lakers, they're going to trade, and someone's going to get Anthony Davis. Well, now that the Pelicans have Zion, they could be the ones who are initiating things. They can control the conversation. They can control where this goes. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, that means, like, for example, I wrote in on the site that this probably means that Drew is not going anywhere.
Well, I'm just looking it up now. When Shams, let's see, he's tweeted, the New Orleans Pelicans are now set up to be Zion Williamson's franchise to lift, and number one pick could ease potential trade of Anthony Davis. His stance on trade has not changed, league sources tell The Athletic. So according to Shams, he hasn't changed his mind. And if that's the case, that might help the Jazz, because maybe the Jazz are a team that could go get Drew. I don't know if the Jazz have the pieces to get him. But
I think the Jazz are, their problem is they have $200 bills and a few fives and tens.
Mm-hmm. We don't really have.
And they don't have anything in the middle. Like, it's just like either you're giving Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert, and then there's a big step down for, you know, with Joe Ingles and Derek Favors. There's not really and especially now that they have Zion, Derek Favors isn't really valuable in that scenario to them, mm-hmm. Moving forward. And
unless they think that Derek Favors is a nice pairing with Zion.
With Zion.
Which he might be, actually, but
yeah, it's hard to, they're a wild card. Like, that's what's so beautiful about it. Before this draft lottery, you basically could say with pretty certainty what it was. Basically, whoever wins this is going to trade Zion for Anthony Davis.
Mm-hmm. And now they
can, for the most part, now they have a chance. Crazier things have happened. There was a time when Kobe Bryant was 100% going to leave the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't happen. They called his bluff and they built a team around him, and he changed his mind pretty quick when he was like, oh, we're winning. That could change. And the Pelicans have until the trade deadline to move Anthony Davis. So they can wait and have the luxury of time. And there was a quote by from Wojnarowski where he said in the whole war room where they're, you know, the ping pong balls or whatever are in there, and somebody was talking to Woj, and somebody said, "Oh, so who do you think's going to trade for Zion?" And he was like, "No, trade for Anthony Davis now that Zion's going to the Pelicans." And he's like, I'm not sure the Pelicans are even going to want a deal. And Alvin Gentry, who was in the corner of the room, exaggeratedly yelled, thank you.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. So that's interesting.
So Anthony Davis, who he may not have changed his desire to be traded, but the Pelicans have definitely changed their desire to trade him. So I think things have changed there. When it comes to Memphis, though, I hate that people have been like, kind of crapping on Mike Conley. I don't know how Mike Conley has gone from really good player over the past season to complete geriatric in a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Like people are like, yeah, he's going to be 32 years old, but they're speaking like 32 years old is the new 45. Like you're like, ah, we might as well bring back John Stockton. Like it's like you're talking about a guy who averaged per 36, 23 points a game, 7 assists, on 43% shooting from the floor, 36 from three, 48 from at the rim, and then he gets to the line at 6 times per 36 and hits 85% of those. I'm sorry, that is an insane upgrade over any player, and he instantly becomes the best point guard that Utah's had since Deron Williams.
Well, can I just? I mean, I don't know if this is a hot take or not, but I'd rather have Mike Conley than Kemba Walker. And that's not even really that hard of a decision for me. I mean, if 2 years of Mike Conley at $34 million at 30, what is he, 32, is much better. And I think some people have really fallen in love with Kemba Walker, who is a very good player. And if that's who the Jazz end up with, then that's pretty exciting because it means they got a huge victory in the offseason by getting a free agent. But Kemba Walker shot 35% from three. His 3-point percentage has gone down the last two seasons. He's also an undersized guard who doesn't defend well. Mike Conley, though, who isn't all that much bigger than Kemba, is a much better defender, is a grittier, tougher player in that sense.
He's stockier too. Like he's Kemba's lighter built.
Well, and he would just fit into the Jazz system really well, and you could see him aging nicely. Where Kemba lot of the time really relies on that quickness and the athleticism, which, you know, he's a smaller guy, and it seems like that tends to go well for smaller guys, but you know what?
He's not always going to have that.
Well, here's the thing. What have we been watching with Isaiah Thomas? And I know Isaiah Thomas is a smaller player than even Kemba Walker. But man, when you've got a guy like that, and if they lose even a step, it goes pretty fast with their ability to even play beyond the floor. Mm-hmm. And if you're giving a 4-year max of, you know, the money that they're talking about for Kemba, and that if that falls off at any point in that period, man, and if it's already started to fall off, I mean, you've got some problems. But Mike Conley,
I'm
looking at Mike Conley versus Kemba Walker. Conley is better field goal percentage, better 3-point percentage. Kemba's a little bit better from two, so 48% for Conley, 49% for Kemba. Conley overall has a better offensive rating, better defensive rating. He's just, I don't know. He's just a better player, honestly. And both of them, Kemba and Conley, were the lead guy on their team. And Conley...
last year.
Yep.
And played with bad supporting cast.
Exactly. Well, Conley was in the Western Conference too, by the way. And so, I don't know. I would prefer the Jazz go get a free agent straight up. My preference is Tobias Harris. But if the Jazz don't feel like they can get him or whatever, then I am perfectly happy bringing in Mike Conley.
I think one of the things to think about as the Utah Jazz go into this offseason is they're building for – so they have a tight window. They have a tight contention window for Rudy Gobert at his prime and Donovan Mitchell not in his prime but still improving every single year. And just because of age-wise, those two don't really coincide at the same point. Big men tend to drop off a bit earlier because, you know, gravity is a tough son of a bee. Like, it takes a hold on a 7-footer more than a 6-footer.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you have that, Utah is looking – the reason they've kind of targeted Mike Conley is, A, they were trying to keep Derek Favors if possible and were willing to go out over the salary cap. Things fell apart, and now they're not going to have that. The funny thing is, if they still don't want to have to get rid of Derek Favors, they're going to have to give up a lot more depth if they wanted to do so in a trade. Either they're giving up Derek Favors in a trade, or they're going to have to let him go, or they're going to have to part with Jay Crowder, Kyle Korver, and hope that Kyle Korver doesn't retire before they can trade him. They would have to give up Dante Exum, who it's been rumored back and forth whether he was a sticking point or not. They would have to give up a first rounder with less trade protections on there if they were doing so, because they're giving up less good things. So it's interesting. But the other thing that is kind of nice is there is that kind of bias when you are negotiating. When you are wanting the thing that you already have, sometimes the price can unconsciously be lowered because you're like, well, now it's not a do or die situation if I get a top three pick.
Mm-hmm.
We already have it. We're playing with house money. And so you're like, if I can just get a little bit more. And so the price might unconsciously get be less now because Utah's like, well, here's the thing. You guys already got the point guard of the future. What you guys need is depth or veteran help. And so now they're able to kind of meander their way, kind of side skirt a few things at the negotiating table. So that could possibly allow them to do some different things. So pivoting from the crazy NBA lottery news, our man passed Jazz point guard, while still on the roster for at least until June 30th, Ricky Rubio was in the news recently. He was speaking to, speaking to a Spanish outlet, AS, and they were asking him about his possibilities ahead of free agency. And it looks like he understands where his place is going to be. He is asked where he thinks he could go, and he's like, well, you know, a lot of teams have starting point guards under contract, so it's kind of waiting to see where starting point guards go or land, or if there's an opening, whether that's Kemba or Golden State or Houston or Boston. And so he understands that he's not in that top tier. But what's interesting is he was talking about how this is his biggest window, because by the time his next contract ends, he could, if he signs a 3 or 4 year, he'll be done. He'll be 32. He's like, well, you know, and that's towards the end of my career, and he wants to win a ring. But he said something interesting. So first he said, I'd like to win the ring being the protagonist, because a ring without playing wouldn't feel like mine. I want to have a leading role, and now it's time to find a team where I can achieve that goal. Okay. Next. So the person followed up and said, well, you know, how did you feel about, you know, you have a leading role in Utah. how did you feel about the Jazz being willing to trade you during the regular season? And he said, well, if you analyze it as a business, which is what it is, I can understand it because in June I become a free agent and they had nothing in return. Maybe they thought they had a sticker. I'm guessing he means coupon that expired in 3 months and they change it for another one that had 3 years of contract like Mike Conley. That makes you think. If you don't know if it's because maybe you're not playing well or if what they wanted was to make some changes to improve. In the end, you can't take it personally. But here it comes. All that has affected me without a doubt. If the question had been asked a year ago, I'd sign with them with my eyes closed. Now, from here to July, many things can happen.
Well, you know what? Can I say one thing? I would be perfectly happy to drive Ricky Rubio to the airport to the next team he plays on so that they I'm having a hard time holding back my
you never want to clown on a guy, but at the same time he starts the interview out being like, yeah, I'm not a top tier guy, but then he's acting like he's really miffed because he was almost traded for a top tier guy.
Yeah.
Like, here's the thing. You can't be, and you've got to know, like, and all my Mormons out there know, the 8 cows from Ohana thing. Like, if they're negotiating and they're like, yeah, only 1 cow. And you're like, okay, you're a 1 cow dude. Yeah,
you're no 10 cow.
And the Jazz tried to pull. They were like, okay, we'll give you Ricky Rubio plus 1 cow. And the Memphis Grizzlies were like, whoa, 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 that is definitely not enough. We're going to at least need like a second round cow and a cow to be named later. And also this past third round pick cow to get the deal done. Like, that's a lot of cows. And so you got to think, like, you weren't matching value. It wasn't like they were like, you weren't a coupon. You were the paper that the coupon was printed on, and they were moving and they were adding pieces to it. You weren't the print on top. And so, I get that, like, when we're in a job and if we feel like, you know, the walls are closing in or they're wanting to move on from us, I think every single one of us listening to this podcast or on this podcast is going to our performance is going to go down. We're not going to have warm, happy, fuzzy feelings for that. And performance is going to diminish. Having said that, the NBA is not like a normal job at all. There is the expectation that you're going to be traded. You're going to have the expectation that you can be moved at any time. It is entertainment. It is not like a normal job. It is not like a normal marketing 9-to-5 job. It is an entertainment. You're an entertainer playing basketball for others for their entertainment. And you're getting paid a good money to do so. And yes, it is going to interfere. But at the same time, your job is to perform for the best of your ability. And if somebody says, if somebody there says, yeah, I think you're more of an understudy than the lead role, that it is what it is at that point. And I think what Ricky Rubio might find in this market when he's out there is if he gets a starting role, I think it's only with like the Phoenix Suns, who are not going to be like a true... he's not going to get to be the protagonist playing for a ring. He's going to be with a bad
team.
Exactly.
Well, it's going to be a team that wants to lose a lot of games. Like, let's just be honest.
Like Charlotte.
Exactly. It's going to be a team that needs a point guard that can, you know, help develop someone like Jaren Jackson and Ja Morant or whatever, so that they can like get set up. But it's not going to be a player that is good enough to help you win games. And I'm sorry, we lost a lot of games this year because our starting point guard shot like 29% from three for most of the season. And it hurt us. And we lost playoff games this year because people didn't have to guard our starting point guard from the 3-point line. So our
starting point guard couldn't make them pay.
No, and our starting point guard couldn't guard a tree stump half the season. it gets annoying when every single team you play, their starting guard has like their career high against you every night. There's a reason that happens. There's a reason we lost by 50 points to Dallas. There's a reason we lost to Indianapolis without Victor Oladipo multiple times because like we couldn't guard Darren Collison. Like, it's frustrating. The Jazz were very loyal to Ricky Rubio. They held up with every promise they ever gave him. He kind of benefited from a lot of luck with Dante Exum getting injured, because I promise you that by the end of this season, had Dante not been hurt, he would have been playing more, because the production from our point guard was not good. It was very, very bad.
Yeah. And they were trying to keep his name out of rumors. Like, they were really trying during this process, like Dennis Lindsay said, unfortunately, team leaked something and it was unethical. There are a lot of scenarios where we think Ricky could be back. Like, they didn't want to have that out there. They were trying to protect him at all costs, even though they were trying to move him. That's, I mean, in the NBA, where people's names are tossed out there all the time for trade rumors, Utah Jazz do a phenomenal job of trying to protect their guys so they're not wrapped up in trade rumors week after week after week after week after week. They do their best to try to avoid that. But even despite all that, Ricky Rubio, who has got a starting job, who was brought here because of Gordon Hayward, and Utah Jazz probably at that point, once Gordon Hayward leaves, most teams would have been like, you know what, we're going to see if we can jettison you again. we're probably not going to keep a promise. And they had promised he was going to be a starter and all that. They kept their promise despite Gordon Hayward not being here. They were true to him. And despite all that, after the trade deadline, like, Ricky Rubio frustratedly took a shot at the front office. I'm not going to say kind of, because it was a shot. And he says, teams up sometimes upstairs, meaning the front office, they don't feel like chemistry matters. Sometimes it matters more than anything. And here's the thing. He takes a shot at the front office that saying they don't really understand about chemistry, when that freaking front office brought back the majority of the team minus one player from the year mm-hmm. prior. And you can only name, there was only 2 years in Utah Jazz history, two years where they took back a higher percentage of players.
Yeah. So saying that
what do you do at that point? It's like, dude, he did. They tried. It didn't work. And guess what? His job at that point, when like they make a promise to you, but your job is to perform and keep your promise. And at that point, when you're turning the ball over, when they were making these trades and they were trying to, at that time, the Jazz hadn't really turned it on yet. Mm-hmm. They were struggling. And your turnaround was like, okay, cool. Well, it's February now, and we're still waiting for you to turn it on, and you're injured most of January. And they saw their rookie guard like having to pull most of that, and they weren't sure when you returned from injury if you were going to be the same dude. Yeah, they got to make moves for themselves, and you thought that was the appropriate time after you had just missed a month to be like, you know what, our this front office doesn't really understand. And this is where Ricky Rubio's like in the community. He's a super nice guy. He's a lot, like, I get all that, but a strong locker room guy doesn't pull an us versus them against one of the best run organizations in the league. If there is any organization that's going to understand your position as a player more than anybody, it's going to be the small market Utah Jazz, because they have to protect their players, because they can't. The last thing they can afford to do is burn a bridge with a bunch of different agencies. Mm-hmm. And so for him to assume, like, so that's what, when I'm reading these quotes and he's just like, well, you know, I was going to do it with the Utah Jazz, and he'd be like, dude, like, you would be lucky if they came back to you, because guess what? The Utah Jazz aren't going to burn that bridge with you, even though it sounds like you're kind of like doing a Terry Rozier light to the organization, where you're just like, well, you know, I was going to sign a contract, but you know, the way the last year has gone. Yeah. I mean, I can't believe the last year you got to keep your starting position, despite being one of the worst point guards in the league. You got to, you never were in jeopardy of losing your job any of these 2 years, despite being really up and down. The team stuck with you. And the team kept everything
not just
together.
Stuck with him, but
they
constantly put out, marketing and PR to make him look like Saint Rubio of Spain. Like people like
they did a really great job. They did a really good job for him. So to see him being like, well, I can't believe it. I'm like, they're the five for the fight initiative. They balanced it with his charity so that they were able to have some synergy there. They worked with him in the community. And he did great things here. He helped build the culture of the Utah Jazz. The strength of the team is the team. He did a lot of things, but it is a 50-50 street. And you don't see the Utah Jazz out here being like, you know what? You know, we thought we were going to bring Ricky Rubio back, but after this year, it would be hard for us to do so. No, they didn't even say that. Dennis Lindsay said there are a lot of scenarios we could bring him back, and we didn't want that to be leaked out there.
So he's doing the thing. It's hypocritical, honestly, to do the thing that you were mad at the Jazz for doing. I don't know. The Jazz gave Ricky Rubio every opportunity he got to start, regardless of how he played. And I promise you there were other guys on that Jazz team that felt like it wasn't fair. And I think we're probably going to get some stories here at some point about, just how good the chemistry was from a guy who constantly would pout. Like, for example, in that time that he was injured, the Jazz were still winning games, and some of them pretty decisively with Royce O'Neal starting. But when Ricky Rubio comes back, he pouts and he complains and he gives us a hard time. And now when we see this quote about starting and how he wants to be the protagonist, it's really, really clear that this guy might not be quite exactly what we think he is. And, the fact of the matter is he's an Excel athlete with a sports agency that sets up hospital visits directly after a poor performance of a game, which is irritating. I mean, it's great that he does it. Good for you, Rubio. But it's always a coincidence that after a freaking terrible performance, we are always having some sort of charity event the next day. And so maybe that's a little coincidental, and maybe that's not very nice of me to say, but it's irritating to hear a player kind of flame the team who honestly did everything they could to make it work out and make him happy and make him his money and whatever bonuses he has in his contract for starting and stuff like that to make him happy. And now for him to flame it's annoying. It's selfish. And guess what? The NBA is not here to make Ricky Rubio happy in every single way. And you know what else is going to be annoying is that when we post this podcast and write the article and everything about it, we're going to get flamed by a bunch of Ruby bros who will say that we hate Rubio. Just like every single night when we watch this team and just tell everyone exactly what was happening, you get someone just going crazy because you hate Rubio, or you think that if the Jazz would just make the team better, you'd realize how good Rubio is. I am so excited to move on. It's time. I'm ready. Just like Celtics fans are ready to drive Kyrie Irving to the airport, I'm excited to I'll Uber Ricky Rubio to the airport anytime, even though right now he's in Spain doing whatever. I'm so over it.
So we have very direct quotes from we move from the direct quotes of Ricky Rubio to the mysterious quotes from Derek Favors. Evidently, Derek Favors earlier tonight posted a story on his Instagram where he says, and I quote, "It's so frustrating knowing how terrible, how fake a person actually is, yet everyone loves them because they put on a good show." I don't mean to time this right after we talk about Ricky Rubio.
but I mean,
that's just incidental because we only talk about the Utah Jazz. But it's there's some weird quotes coming out here from the Utah Jazz's potential free agents that are just head scratchers. Where, well, for this one, for example, it's just is Derek Favors talking about teammates? Is he talking about stuff that's in his his life? Obviously, Derek Favors is really dependent on the Utah Jazz right now and guaranteeing his contract since he has a team option that needs to be picked up by July 6th, or he becomes a free agent. So there, or he can, it can be picked up and he can be traded. So there's some really interesting things going out there. Any comments on Derek Favors?
First off, Favors is not as like the Rubio stuff pisses me off, because that's like direct, obvious shots at the team and the organization.
Yeah.
Sometimes Favors is like this with social media. He kind of just puts out these like kind of vague, kind of passive aggressive things. It very well.
And he also likes trolling. Yeah, he also really likes trolling his audience too. Like, we have to put that out there. He does that just to sometimes just see what happens. But this one got deleted really quick. That's the interesting thing.
He's talking about a buddy or a girlfriend or a family member, or
it could even be an inside joke with somebody else. Like, they could have done that and he puts it out there. Like, nudge, hint, nudge,
and
nudge.
Type realizes, thing. So you don't know the context. I tend to give Derek Favors the benefit of the doubt, just because it's not like particularly obvious what he's talking about. It could be anything, but it is.
And he's a really good locker room guy who has always been like, he didn't even throw Gordon Hayward under the bus. Like, everyone on the Jazz team, sent out the flare Gordon Hayward's direction when he left, and Derek Favors didn't do that at all. So
I give Favors the benefit of the doubt. He's kind of funny on social media. He's not on that often. And when he is, sometimes it's just kind of vague, or he'll post song lyrics and stuff like that. Or
weird emojis at their crazy times. Like, this last trade deadline, but the year before, he kept on posting like weird emojis every day, and everyone's like, what does it mean?
And he literally could just be kind of messing around,
right. He loves to troll. He loves the craziness. So we go from that to my favorite smoke of the season. Oh my gosh, it's just such a good high. Terry Rozier was out here talking about Gordon Hayward, and he was on what was the show? I think he was on? First Take.
I forgot, but yeah, ESPN First Take,
and. They were talking to him, and this is what he had to say. I got the full quote right here. The ball was either in Kyrie or Gordon Hayward's hands most of the time. So I feel like Terry Rozier is just in the corner or on the bench. I'm out there for a little bit of half my minutes, so I'm not really being in my position, Rozier said of sharing the backcourt with Irving. I'm not being Terry Rozier because I have to adjust how Kyrie plays. And then when Kyrie comes out, Gordon Hayward comes in. I feel like his usage is super high, so a lot of plays get called for him. Now, the thing is to be fair, before we completely roast Gordon and Hayward, which I really want to do, the numbers do tell a different story. Hayward only had an 18.2% usage rate this season, only a hair ahead of Rozier, who was at 17.9%. Time of possession per game. Terry Rozier had the ball in his hands for 1.7 more minutes per game than Gordon Hayward. And the touches per game were Terry Rozier had 6.4 more touches per game than Gordon Hayward. But here's the meaty part. He says them treating Gordon and Kyrie, I wouldn't say different than everybody else, but I feel like they treated them like they were just on that level where there were no adjustments that could be made, because they are who they are. We never figured it out after that. When asked if Irving and Hayward and the rest of the roster returns, if he would stay, and he says, nah, I might have to go. I put up with a lot this year. I said what I said after the season. I think we all know I'm not trying to step into that again.
Well, woo! Might be able to go get Terry Rozier if you want him.
He is really available.
He is 100% available.
My goodness. Oh, my goodness. Okay. So there. So what's your take? What's your take on Terry Rozier bringing the smoke?
I think there's a two-part thing. It's two-part. Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving are confirmed bad teammates. And anyone who has a problem with me saying that, I don't care. It's just a fact. At this point, you have two scenarios where it's come out that that's the case. And by their fruits, ye shall know them. So that's part of it. I think the other part is that, like, some of this is on Danny Ainge. Because at a certain point, when you put this many guys on a team, this many draft picks that are developing at the same time, at a certain point, all these guys are going to want to earn their contracts. And Terry Rozier wanted to earn a contract this year. And because he had to constantly defer to Kyrie and Gordon, Gordon, who honestly probably got brought along too quickly and did not perform well for most. There was a time post All-Star break where he started to play pretty well. But then in the playoffs, he just fell off again. Didn't really earn those minutes, but got them anyway. And I get it that they've invested in Hayward with that contract and everything. But when you put that many guys on a team and these guys are all going to want to earn their contract because there comes a point where they're not worried about making sure Gordon's happy because they would like to get as big a contract as they can when it's their time to go out and shop the market. And it's not surprising that, like, all these guys who are getting less minutes and less touches are going to be annoyed. And it's a lot of blame that needs to go to Danny Ainge. Danny Ainge should have made some moves to clear up that roster, probably should have traded Rozier at some point. And there were rumors that, like, Phoenix would have traded for him. And, you know, it torpedoed their season. And honestly, if maybe they make some trades and you figure out, like, you know, if I trade Rozier, does that actually make the locker room a little bit better? Because, you know, Rozier probably has himself to blame in some cases that, you know, but that's on Ainge a little bit too. It's on Hayward. It's on Kyrie. The Celtics are in shambles right now.
Like, they're a mess. It's so crazy to see that Boston, L.A., and New York, well, New York's always been burning, but it's really weird to see Boston and L.A. just being complete tire fires. And I agree. Like, Danny Ainge, he shoulders a lot of this blame. You can't be constantly jettisoning guys and having your own players repeatedly in trade rumors, like, day after day after day from the time they're rookies on, because they're never going to feel comfortable. Plus, all of these guys, it wasn't that they just, they're rising up and they want more minutes. They played a lot of minutes when Gordon Hayward was hurt and Kyrie Irving was hurt last year, and they were good. Like, they were really successful team without those guys. And it is so crazy. I never would have dreamed in my best case scenario that the Utah Jazz would win one more game than the Boston Celtics 2 years after Gordon Hayward leaving. I never would have dreamed this. I never would have dreamed that they would be in a better situation going into free agency this year than the Boston Celtics. And plus, if I'm Anthony Davis, do I really want to end up in Boston? I just saw Kyrie completely give up on his team. I just saw a team, guys are sniping each other back and forth in the media. Gordon Hayward looks like a shell of himself, though. If they're making that trade, there's a good chance Gordon Hayward's heading to
New Orleans. He has no trade value
he has none. He would be the vehicle. He would only be there to match salary, and then they would be throwing all their assets. It is crazy to me. And I agree with Gordon Hayward where he's he is neither a plus for a locker room or nor a negative. He's just there. And we saw that with the Jazz locker room, where it was just like the only person he hung out with was Joe Ingles. And when he was there, and when he left, the only person he really thanked in Utah by name, player, and
yeah, he didn't even was name Jeremy Ingles. Evans.
He didn't name Ingles. He didn't name Gobert, the dude who basically lifted, like, changed the franchise so they actually could win. He didn't name he didn't name Joe Johnson. Oh, you know, the dude who hit the shot, who let you go to the second round. That guy, and the dude who carried your tail in the first round when you didn't show up. He didn't mention, like, it was just. The whole thing was just weird. He didn't mention Derek Favors, who he had been playing with all, like, as rookies together for his entire career. None of that. And so, like, and by the way, Derek Favors also carried his tail in the first round against the Clippers. The whole thing is just really, 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 really was just, I mean, we could rehash it a million times, and we have. But like, he's not really a leader. He's a piece, and he can be a very serviceable piece, and he could be a good player. But I don't see Gordon Hayward as a leader. And the more time that has gone on, I think we can all attribute most of the Jazz's turnaround and the leadership to Rudy Gobert. We remember when Rudy Gobert called out the defense in Gordon Hayward's last year. And said, we got some guys who, you know, care more about getting their points up and their shots up than they do about playing defense. And George Hill and Gordon Hayward were just like, oh, that's such an immature comment. He's still learning in the league. And looking back, we're like, nah, Rudy Gobert was completely right. He was right on track. And he was speaking to the troubles of what the team was going through at that time because they had lost their identity. But somehow he got painted as a dude who was immature, and the franchise was still protecting Gordon Hayward because they're like, please pre-sign with us. Please don't leave us. Please don't leave us. Please don't leave us. And they kowtowed to him, and he still left. And the true leader of that team, Rudy Gobert, and then another great leader in Donovan Mitchell. And then also we see that Joe Ingles is part of that leadership structure, mm-hmm. really comes into play. So I hate that. There's two things I hate. I hate that Terry Rozier is getting put on blast completely for being completely honest. Like, there's the thing. We want our players to be honest when they're speaking to the media. When we ask them a question, we're like, man, I really like when they're earnest with us and really speaking from the heart. And Terry Rozier, like, he's not saying anything we don't know. Like, everyone's like, I can't believe he's saying this. It's just like, these are things that every sports writer has been saying about the Celtics all season. Kyrie is too selfish. They're kowtowing to Gordon Hayward, and he's not ready to be back on the court. These young guys aren't getting enough time, and so they're playing out of roles. He's said all the things that we know, and for some reason we're like, wow, man, I'm not sure if I would want to be his teammate. And it's just like, why? Like, I would actually want to be more of Terry Rozier's teammate than I would Kyrie Irving's, because at least Rozier's going to be telling it like it is, and Kyrie's just going to be there – ignoring the problem, quitting on my team, and having one foot out.
Like, and why do calling I, LeBron like, mid-season to apologize, saying these guys, like, just kind of shots at his own teammates? It's so weird.
Oh, that, like, yeah, Kyrie was just like, yeah, these guys are just young, and apologizing to LeBron, where it was just like, are you looking to get traded? Do you not want to be with the team anymore? Like, what? Like, that was just a weird thing, or where he said the guys, you know, don't know how to win. It was just like, bro, yeah, they do. They did it last year without you. Don't know how to win.
They were a better team without him. Like, they went farther. It was they went to the Eastern Conference Finals, and it took LeBron playing literally 48 minutes for them to lose. So. They were a better team with Rozier. It's just a fact. And his numbers took a dip this year. Honestly, if the Jazz went and got Rozier this year, I'd be happy with that. For one, he's out to prove himself. And I think that Quinn Snyder can get a lot out of that guy. And he is a shooter. And, you know, his numbers, it is a little troubling. But, you know, that guy cares. That guy wants to win. But you know what's funny is this Kyrie stuff might, and I know we're going a little long, so maybe I'll make this quick, but this might end up turning into something that actually helps the Jazz in a way, because let's say Kyrie goes to Brooklyn or New York or something like that. That might open up an avenue to get someone like D'Angelo Russell if the Jazz, if everything plays right. And I have to say, there's been a lot of things that have gone on in the playoffs that might have benefited the Jazz. The Philadelphia Sixers lost in the first round. And they have a lot of questions
second round
on who they want to pay.
Oh, second round.
I don't know what I said. They lost in the second round. Oh, yeah. Second round to the Toronto Raptors. And they were expecting to go to the finals this year. And they're going to have to pay all those guys. And there's just no way they can pay everyone without an enormous tax bill.
Their entire team is a free agent, it feels like, except Embiid and Ben Simmons.
Is on a max, and Simmons will be going up for a max next year. So what are you going to do? Max Tobias, Max Jimmy. You've got J.J. Redick, who honestly, if you watch that series, looked like their most important player outside of Embiid because he just hits so many shots. And so are you going to bring back J.J. Redick? He looked incredibly valuable. And so if you're going to pay all these guys, and someone, I can't remember who it was who made a good point, but last year, J.J. Redick, they asked J.J. Redick to wait so that they could pay other guys and make sure they knew what they were doing. And J.J. Redick waited, and they did give him a 1-year contract, but J.J.'s not going to wait this year. He's like 34. If they want to get him, they better pay him. And I don't know. There's going to be a lot of things that might roll the Jazz's way.
Maybe Dennis Lindsay was light years ahead. Maybe he knew by not getting Gordon Hayward that Gordon Hayward would tank the Celtics. And by tanking the Celtics, it would force Kyrie out. And forcing Kyrie out, he saw 2 years ahead of time that D'Angelo Russell was not just going to be a project, but he was going to be an all-star. And then he would get his point guard of the future to pair with his with Donovan Mitchell.
Yes.
He was all ahead of this. He knew this.
That's exactly what I think he did. That's exactly what happened.
Light years ahead. Like you can't touch him. Speaking of general management news, as we pivot, the Utah Jazz are now run by Jay-Z.
Justin Zanuck.
Hofa. So our man, Justin Zanuck, got a promotion. Congrats.
Big congrats.
He's been looking for that promotion for a while. He had been in Milwaukee for a year as sort of the general manager in waiting, and then they gave it to a 32-year-old kid. And he was a lot of people's second best choice because they couldn't, there was tiebreakers, weird stuff. Anyway, he came back to Utah, and Utah has really enjoyed having him on staff. And instead of losing him, they said, you know what? Things are working so well here. Why don't we just make you general manager? And now Dennis Lindsay is the executive, executive vice wizard of operations. Is that what it is? Or high wizard?
High wizard, grand
chaplain. Is it magician? I don't really follow wizarding circles, and I don't read fantasy books.
Sorcerer Supreme.
So Sorcerer Supreme. There we go. VP Sorcerer Supreme of basketball operations.
Can I say one thing, though? You compare the difference between the Jazz hiring Justin Zanuck and the absolute minefield that the Lakers walked through with iron shoes to get to their coaching hire. It is unreal. You have the Jazz who hire Justin Zanuck, who has, from everything you hear, just great connections around the league. He's really, he's been within the organization for years and years and just ready to go. You know what you're hiring. He has an understanding of the vision of the team. He's someone you can trust, and not just trust, but count on to do big and great things for Utah. The Lakers, Jeannie Buss is listening to Kurt Rambis, who wants him to hire people based on the fact that he would like to be an assistant coach, wants to hire Jason.
And Kurt Rambis, who can't even hide the fact when he likes porn posts on Twitter, Kurt Rambis.
Well, and they,
Kurt Rambis, who was responsible for the Knicks mess. And then the best part is that it's not even they're listening to Kurt Rambis. They're listening to Kurt Rambis's wife, Linda.
Well, and also Jeannie Buss's ex. Oh, no, I can't remember his name. The 10 rings or whatever, 11 rings or.
Phil Jackson?
Phil Jackson. Jeannie Buss is listening to her ex-boyfriend, Phil Jackson, too, for advice. What the hell?
It's like, so great. It is such a tire fire. I love it.
Well, and then on top of that, that's not even everything. On top of that, they are hiring Jason Kidd as an assistant coach. On top of that, they say a week before they do it that they don't like that he has a history of spousal abuse, but then still hire him. It's just beyond, like, what are you doing? Like, you literally could
and Ty
not
Lue,
do
and
it.
And Ty Lue is leaving. I think my favorite thing was Michael Rapaport was on, I think it was First Take. And he's like, why is Linda Rambis in my basketball news? Why should I care about Linda Rambis? What does Linda Rambis have to do with basketball? Like, yeah, you're the wife of Kurt Rambis. What does that matter? Like, why are you here? So I love this. And it's so it's kind of funny. Like, people are like, well, what difference does this make about the Utah Jazz hiring Justin Zanuck? Nothing's changing in Utah. Yeah, that's probably right. Is there probably going to be a bit of a management style change with that? Yes, there's always a management style. The way people run is different. But for the most part, the ship is staying the course and going the same way. There's no massive reorganizations other than the fact that you have an ex-player agent taking the lead in the most pivotal free agent offseason that's ever faced the Utah Jazz. But for the most part, it's a lot of the status quo. And when your organization has been phenomenally run since Dennis Lindsay has taken over, that's huge news. That means for the foreseeable future, for the next 5 years, your Utah Jazz are still going to be well run. Meanwhile, take a look at every other franchise, and there's always a joke where a good ownership is the best advantage you can have in the NBA. And you can take a look at that. The terrible ownerships, whether it's the Washington Wizards, the Phoenix Suns, the LA Lakers, the Sacramento Kings, that seem to, even though they have a good season, their owner is still trying to shake things up because they can't get their tail from, you know, their head out of their butt. Whether it's the Chicago Bulls, the New York Knicks, a good ownership does you wonders. And
oh, it matters very much.
It's so important because a good ownership knows that you hire well and then you get out of their way. And that's what happens at every step in every single one of these other places, whether it's Jeannie Buss, who just can't get out of her own way, whether it is why am I losing track, whether it's Dolan in New York, who threw out a fan because he said to sell the team. Mm-hmm. Like, they're just clowns. They're just clowns at this point because they want to be a big deal instead of running a team well. And they see their team as a luxury. They see it like their yacht, not as like and the best owners see their teams as a gift to their communities. The Milwaukee Bucks see it that way. The Utah Jazz see it that way. The Indiana Pacers see it that way. The Toronto Raptors see it that way. Where you're a vital part of the community, and even though you own the team, you're the city owns the team, and you just cut the checks. And it's so awesome that the Utah Jazz just. And Jazz fans, and this is coming off like we're really sucking up to the Utah Jazz. But it's really lucky because not all teams are lucky the way the Jazz are, where you're able to have well-run teams year in and year out. And it's really special that you can point to the years and name them on your hand in the last almost 30 years in which the Utah Jazz have been bad rather than insanely good. And mm-hmm. so that's really, really special.
I agree. It's nice to be on a team that you know is going to make smart decisions and disciplined decisions, and it just makes it more fun. It's less fun to write articles about a crappy team with bad ownership and bad coaching and all these things that come with bad teams. It's just not very fun. So I appreciate the Jazz hiring Zanuck. I think he's going to be a stud, and I think that, you know, it might not be a coincidence. It's right before free agency, and you know what? I'm going to just let myself believe that this might mean we get someone pretty nice. We'll see, but I think we're going to be looking at a pretty big roster change this offseason. Obviously, Rudy and Donovan, I would be shocked if anything ever happened with them, but maybe everyone else, who knows? You never know. Could be some big changes, but that will be fun.
And speaking on our last thing, and we'll end it on this on a really awesome note. So Donovan Mitchell is a pretty big effing deal now. So Donovan Mitchell posted on Instagram and on Twitter a picture with him and freaking Tom Holland, the Spider-Man, with Tom Holland wearing what looks like Donovan Mitchell's size 2300 shoes. Like with Tom Holland wearing them, he looks like he's wearing clown shoes. But there was a picture where you have where Donovan Mitchell has scratched himself out, but if you lighten it, it looks like Donovan Mitchell is in a Spider-Man suit, and the Spider-Man suit from Far From Home, the Spider-Man movie that's coming out in July, and you have Tom Holland wearing the Adidas kicks that are Donovan Mitchell's Dawn's issue number one with the Spider-Man colors, and they're both pointing at each other like the Spider-Man meme, and oh my God, it's awesome. It is so cool.
He's the most marketable player we've ever had. Also, has a chance to be the best player we've ever had, honestly, with his just skill level. We're very blessed as Jazz fans to have Donovan Mitchell. He is amazing.
And so, do you think, okay, two-part question. One, are you going to get the shoes? No, this is a three-part. Two, what colors are you getting them in? And three, do you think Donovan Mitchell is in Spider-Man Far From Home?
I would like to. I think I am going to get the shoes. I think I am going to get the blue and red Spider-Man colorway, because I think, honestly, that's the fun one to me, because that's Donovan Mitchell's nickname is Spida. It's a Spider-Man theme. I don't know why you wouldn't want to get the Spider-Man colors, but, you know, to each his own. Donovan showed off a bunch of different colorways that were very cool, like a black and neon green one looked pretty cool. I can't remember all of them, but I think I'd go with blue and red. I do not think that he is in Spider-Man Far From Home, because unless he was in it before last season, when it's just not a lot of time. NBA players don't have a lot of time to be in movies,
but they can always do a reshoot. They can always
he'll make a cameo. I could see a cameo.
I could see like a cameo, because I mean, they were even able to like last minute throw Donald Glover into the first Spider-Man movie as Miles Morales's uncle.
Well,
in there,
you know what's happening. Is I'm sure what they're doing is filming the marketing for the shoe when it releases, and I'm guessing that it's going to be released the same weekend as that Spider-Man movie when it comes out. That's my guess. Mm-hmm.
Well, the shoe comes out on July 3rd. The shoe actually is scheduled for July 5th, and the movie comes out July 3rd. They'd move the movie up before, because originally it was going to land right after 4th of July. So I wonder if they're going to move the shoe up to July 3rd, the day before 4th of July for the drop.
I could see it.
Like 10 out of 10, I will cop cop these. Like, I'm gonna get the original colorway. That's what I want. I want the red, the blue, the white, Spider-Man colors, because I just want to be able to have, like, yeah, this was the original. This was the issue one. This is the time when Utah actually had a player that had a signature shoe, and it wasn't Karl Malone's ugly LA Gears. It was
even though I would love to have a pair of those LA Gears, that would be extremely awesome. Even if they're ugly, that's why you get it. Like having a collector's item about one of my favorite jazz players of all time. I don't know why anyone wouldn't want it.
And I do love how they're only $100. We're saying only, but I mean, that's a really good deal for a signature shoe.
When you consider the Jordan 4 Bread came out 2 weeks ago and it was $220, it's pretty good. That's a pretty good deal. $220.
Yeah, for real. So I think, and plus, man, I hope they're comfy, because the Dames are really comfy. So if these ones are comfy, then I am
even more totally awesome.
Yes, I'm totally for it. The only thing I question is there's that weird cushion on the back, but at the same time, I do wear socks that have a cushion at the top for the ankles for running and things like that. So maybe I'm already looking that goofy, but now it's my shoe that's going to look goofy instead of my socks. So,
I think everyone should go out and buy themselves some Dawn 1s, because it's going to be fun, and it'll be fun to see different, like the Dawn 2 and the Dawn 3. So you know what'll help get Dawn 2 and Dawn 3s out there? Get some nice supporting cast for Donovan Mitchell so he can go deep in the playoffs. That's why the Jazz got to do it.
Help him sling them shoes.
Exactly. Okay.
Well, it's been real, everybody. Thanks for listening to us. As always, subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are sold. And also, check us out at slcdunk.com. You can follow us on Twitter at slcdunk, on Instagram at slcdunk, and you can go to our Facebook page, slcdunk, as well. There's kind of a theme here. They're all slcdunk. And you can search for us at wherever podcasts are. Just search SLC Dunk Podcast, and that's where you will find SLC Punks. So, anything else you guys say, James?
I'm good. I'm out.
Sweet. Peace out, guys.
Talk to you later.